D-Radio Wissen. Hörsaal. Rein in den Elfenbeinturm. Es gilt das gesprochene Wort. In Universitäten, Akademien und Forschungszentren. Die großen Köpfe der Vergangenheit. Die besten Hirne der Gegenwart.
Mit Hans-Jürgen Bartsch. Im Hörsaal haben wir heute einen Job für Sie zu vergeben. Parfümeur, Parfümhersteller. Dafür brauchen Sie nur eine gute Nase. Sagt jedenfalls Mark Buxton, unser heutiger Referent. Für ihn selbst habe das jedenfalls gereicht. Geboren ist er in England, aufgewachsen bei Hamburg und dann nach Paris gegangen. Er hat zunächst Parfums für renommierte Häuser entworfen wie Comme des Garçons, Givenchy, Versace oder Lagerfeld. Seit 2011 hat er nun seine eigene Firma und, was noch hochspannend an seinem Berufsweg ist, wissen Sie vielleicht sogar, wenn Sie vor vielen Jahren Wetten, dass mit Frank Elstner gesehen haben. Vor mehr als 20 Jahren schlenderte er mit einem Freund durch ein Kaufhaus, als dabei die Idee geboren wurde, Wetten, dass wir alle Parfums allein mit unserer Nase auseinanderhalten können. Unmittelbar nach seinem Fernsehauftritt bot ihm ein großer deutscher Parfümhersteller einen Ausbildungsplatz an und seine Karriere begann. Mehr sei hier noch nicht verraten. Buxton geht in seinem englischsprachigen Vortrag gleich näher darauf ein. Wie wird heute Parfum hergestellt? Welche Ausbildung dafür ist nötig oder auch nicht? Welcher Duft ist der erfolgreichste und warum? Mark Buxton hat seine subjektiven Antworten darauf am 3. Mai 2012 gegeben, auf der offiziellen Veranstaltung des Potsdamer Einstein-Forums unter dem Titel Follow Your Nose on Smell. Mark Buxtons freie Rede steht unter dem Motto The Independent Perfumer.
Yeah, perfumer since over 25 years and been working in France, been here now for about 20 years in France. Anyway, cut a long story short. I'm going to tell you a few things about perfume creation, how to do it, how not to do it, whatever to do, whatever. Now, I will try to explain to you how to become a perfumer and how to create a perfume, and then whatever drags after that. Okay, so what is a nose? Good question, actually. You see, it's rather big, and that's what you need. That's the tool you need. But the question is, how to become a perfumer and how did I join perfumery? But that's just a brief story. I'll tell you in a few words. How to become a perfumer? There is a classical way to become a perfumer. That means you join a school. There are a few in France. There's one called Izipka. There's another one called Cinquième Sens. Rather expensive, takes a few years. You can have crash courses if you want, which is even more expensive, and you have a slight little knowledge of fragrance and compositions and whatever, but that's about it. Second possibility is you join a school, an internal school, which I did 27 years ago at the Hamann & Reimer School in Germany. Third possibility is you box your way in, you find a way in, and it happens to certain people. By coincidence, whatever. I became perfumer by coincidence. I don't believe in all this bullshit that you have to be born in a... I think anybody become a perfumer. If you put the question like this, I slid into this industry by coincidence. At the age of 20, I didn't even know that a perfumer existed. They're for me, they're a bit early, actually. So, yeah, as I say, anybody can become a perfumer. I don't necessarily think that you need a special gift to become a perfumer. I think it is a kind of a job which you can learn. It's like becoming a musician, an artist, or whatever. It's kind of an artistic job, somehow, yeah. And I think, as said, anybody can become a perfumer. We have perhaps a few exceptions. I think you might talk about this later on. If you have a problem, accident, whatever, there are perhaps a few percents of people which don't have a very strong odour or can't smell very good. But besides that, I think we all have a nose and we can all smell the difference between chocolate and vanilla and coffee. The only difference is that my nose is better trained than yours. So that's why you have to go to school and to learn your notes. You learn your notes, you learn your accords, and then after that you start learning how to construct a perfume. That's the ABC of the whole business, just like a musician. So let's say you're a young boy, you start playing a piano, and you see that some guy has a talent, some has a medium talent, some has an excellent talent, some probably is a genius, something like that. It's the same with the perfumer. You can learn the basics, but the only thing you can't learn is creativity. And I'm talking about my point of view, because if you ask the same question to 10 different perfumers, you will get 10 different answers, especially that 90% of the perfumers are very, very arrogant people, because they think that our job is very secret and mysterious and nobody knows what we're really doing. So they want to keep it like that, so they see themselves as big artists and creators, whatever. I don't exactly see it like that. So the difference is between a good, a bad, an average, and an excellent perfumer is the creativity. The only thing you can't learn, you have it or you don't have it. So far, just to say if you know how to become a perfumer, whatever. So, and me, by coincidence, I grew up in Germany, and just to make it short, grew up in Germany. What did I do then? I wanted to study fashion design, didn't work out. It was a big epoch of the German designers, upcoming Wolfgang Jorp, Jill Sander, and I wanted to study in Hamburg. The university was full, so I'm a lazy person from nature, so I started to study geology in Göttingen, which didn't mean anything. So anyway, and as certainly quite a few of you know, I made a bet with a friend of mine at the time in Göttingen, this famous German TV program called Wetten, dass, Saturday night. At the time it was still Frank Elstner. And voila, so that's how I got discovered. We made a bet that we could recognize all the perfumes in the world. And we lost the bet, but I got discovered. So, you know, something came out of it. But what I noticed when we started to collect and select all these fragrances, which we had to recognize in the show, that after university we used to meet up. I grew up in a family, I come from restaurants. My parents had restaurants, so that's where I think I first was in contact with odours. I love odours from the kitchen, that's why I like spicy notes and aromatic notes. Anyway, that's beside the point. I think I could still be standing here tomorrow morning, so you have to say stop. And so I got discovered, but when I was selecting all these fragrances, I noticed that they must have something in common somehow. Either it's a single note, it's an accord, or there's a structure. And I noticed that I could memorize them very easily. So, cut the whole story short once again, went to this show, lost the show, and I had an offer by Harman & Weimer at the time, which nowadays is called Symrise, and they offered me if I would like to attend the school, perfume school. And so I did. So that's how it all started, and that's how I slid into the industry. So that's why I'm saying I don't necessarily think you have to be born in Graz or you need a family tradition behind it to become a perfumer. I think you just have to be willing, and if you want to get in there somehow, there's always a possibility to get into any job you want. You have to sometimes take a back door, or you have to really row hard, but if there's a way, there's a way somehow. It's an easy question, but at the same time it's a difficult question, because how to create a perfume, it depends where you position yourself. If you look at the perspective, you're in the industry, you're in the big industry, so you're working for a big group, you get briefed by companies X, they want the perfume, so you get briefed, so you're automatically pushed into a certain direction where you're going to. Of course, we all know that creating a perfume, you have natural products, you have synthetic products, and you have bases. With you having the knowledge of the accords, how to start. I mean, if somebody's asking for an oriental, I'm not going to start with a Fougère accord. So you know already where you're going, where you're starting. But somebody asks you the same question, could you create me a perfume? You, for example. You say, I would like my personal perfume for myself. There, the aspect or the approach is totally different, because I try to create something for you, what you're looking for, And there's nobody else who's going to give me any influence. There's no marketing, there's no evaluation, there's no salesperson, there's no management behind your back who's going to tell you, you should do this because it's going to make more turnover, it's going to be a bestseller, and blah, 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 blah. So the approach, how to start a creation, from my point of view, I've always done it like this, and that's where I was fighting for 25 years, and after 25 years, I just gave up because I think even lasting for 25 years, I should get a gold medal in this industry. Because after all these years of criticism and pushing to a certain direction and telling you what to do, it's not even just that it's internally like that, it's also externally like that. So internally, you're fighting against your colleagues and against the evaluation and even the sales guy. The sales guy can come up to you and say, look, if you don't make this modification, I think it's too green, I won't show your perfume. So who's creating you? Is it me? Is it you? Or is it the company? Or what are we doing? So a lot of difficulties on this way. But I always try to start on a white page. I know it sounds stupid or it may sound a bit arrogant that people say, oh, yeah, Mr. Clever here always starts with a white page. Yes, but it is like that. I mean, the industry has gone so fast in the last 10 years. Everything is computerized. I mean, you have no contact with the labs anymore. You have no physical contacts with any raw materials. You don't even have, you hardly have a contact with your assistant. Yeah. I mean, if you see her once a day, 2 minutes, she puts the bottles in your office and that's it. You're in your little office and you smell your stuff and that's it. So, furthermore, you can start a fragrance and you know by reading the brief, if I start from a J'adore and I put this top note on there, that could work because you have like indices in there, you know, what they're looking for and what type of person it is for and everything like that. So somehow it's become too easy. You have a computer, you just press on a button and then all of a sudden you have this formula and you want to combine it with this formula, so you press on another button and it goes, you have the formula. You press on another button, it goes directly to the lab, where there's a robot. The robot makes your perfume, then it goes back to your assistant. She adds crystalline products because a robot can't handle that, nor resins. So she adds 4 or 5 products, and then you get a solution back, and that's it. So there is no more contact with all this feeling, you know, out emotions, creating a fragrance. If there's something which has been created in-house, any perfumer has done that, let's say the group I was working Simwise, you have no chance to get his formula. There will be no analyzer of this formula, and perfumers keep them to themselves. It belongs to the company, but it's there. But anything else which comes out on the market is automatically analyzed. It takes 24 hours, and you have 90% of the formula. You press on a button. Yesterday, something came out. Tomorrow, you press on a button, you already have 90% of the formula. So this is why the industry is slowly going down the drain, because I call it Lego perfumery. It's like playing with Lego. So you take the fond of this one, you put the heart of that one and the top note on this one, because they're the 3 bestsellers at the moment. So somehow it can work. So where is the art? And secondly, why I said before, I think especially nowadays, anybody can become a perfumer because you already have 90% in the bloody computer. You just have to press on a few buttons and that's it. It's done. Where we're going to afterwards, I'll get down to that later. I've always tried to do is start from a white page. I mean, I'm not a virgin. Even if you start with a white page, you have a chord in your mind. You know where you've come from. It's like music. You have, it's there. So you can't start from scratch, you know. But you need an accord, a strong accord, 3-4 products, which gives the DNA, which gives the information in your fragrance, which gives the guts. And when you smell this, that's it. And then you add around it. But I usually start from that. But I would say 80% of the fragrances which came out on the market, which I created, I'm not even proud about, because perhaps the first idea which I put on the table was that. It had guts. But 1 year later, after working with internally with marketing and evaluation and externally with marketing and evaluation, at the end of the day, you have an Acqua di Gio twist. And at the beginning, it had nothing to do with Acqua di Gio. But you're getting forced into this direction. It's what the market wants. It's what they want. They want success. They want to make money. And that's all it's about. Our industry nowadays is making money. They don't give an F-U-C-K about what's in the bottle. And that is the truth. And that is, unfortunately, the truth. That is, I think, why finally, after 25 years, with my big stone on my back, I jumped out. Well, anyway, that's so far to the creation bit. If it's Jacques, if it's Olivier Cresp, if it, you name them, they get highly paid. But if you don't bring back what the company's expecting, you're in deep shit. They don't care about this anymore. And that's it. You're on the plate. So, and you see now the way some people are trying to escape. We're going back to this manière we had 30, 40, 50 years ago, in-house perfumers. We have the trend now. There are more and more in-house perfumers. Even smaller groups are starting with this. And Jacques Cavalier, who's drawing himself out of Firmenich, who made his whole career there with enormous success, is going to LVMH, and he's becoming the perfumer from LVMH. This is just one little small piece in that. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, mainly every house had that in-house perfumer, like Chanel always had. And they were one of the only traditional houses which kept this in-house perfumer. But all the others, if it was Lubin, if it was Balmain, etc., they all had their in-house perfumers. They were creating for them. They had liberty. There was perhaps only one freelance perfumer which made an enormous success, was Runitzka. But Runitzka, if you look at Runitzka, he created the whole line of Dior. He made all the Dior, the guy. But then he also made perfumes for Rochas and other brands afterwards, yeah. It was mainly the perfumer who chose his qualities of raw materials, and especially naturals. I mean, 20, 30, 40 years ago, perfumes, they had a lot more natural products in there for X reasons. We all know legislation and problems we have with naturals and etc. I mean, but perfumers were so afraid that people would copy something they were making at the time, even though we didn't have all this information we have today with the mass spectrum, the GC, etc., etc. But they were working like with keys, with bases, sub-bases. So if you see a formula, an old formula, which perhaps is only this long, you say, wow, bloody hell, that's well done. But they're all sub-formulas in there. They're formulas he created, which only he has, with his own qualities. He was using like a special kind of a jasmine or three different kind of roses, etc., just to make it complicated that people couldn't copy his work. And even until 10 years ago, perfumers, they never gave the formula entirely into the lab. They only used to give half or a quarter. Then his assistant didn't know what she was really doing, actually. Then he used to give the other quarter, and he used to mix it himself. That she didn't know that was the entire formula of this fragrance. So it's always been very mysterious and very secret and stuff like that. This doesn't exist anymore.
The Independent Perfumer aus unserer Reihe Follow Your Nose on Smell ist heute Thema im Hörsaal. Es unterhält sie der Parfümeur Marc Buxton aus Paris. Wenige Sekunden nur, dann geht's auch schon weiter.
Die Radio Wissen. Hörsaal. Rein in den Elfenbeinturm. Es gilt das gesprochene Wort. In Universitäten, Akademien und Forschungszentren. Die großen Köpfe der Vergangenheit. Die besten Hirne der Gegenwart.
Oh, yeah. Well, we shortly spoke about this, yeah. Natural, synthetic and bases. Bases are mainly those products which don't exist. Fantasy bases, it can be a peach, an apple or things like that where we don't have an extract. And there are lots of naturals like that. Lily of the Valley, Lily, etc. They don't exist as natural products. So we create a base which smells like that. And so they are products we work with. I would say nowadays, minimum 90% is synthetic in a perfume by formula cost. The naturals, there are still quite a few which we use as fillers or which aren't too expensive, which you can still use in a rather big slug. Mainly the citric products are not too expensive, the aromatic products. But all the big naturals like rose, jasmine, tuberose, always, etc., the prices have gone sky high. Talking about a kilo of rose nowadays for Bulgarian is around 5,500. Turkish is 4,500. Always can go up to 15,000. Tuberose, 4,000. Osmanto, 6,000, etc., etc. So, but the beauty about all these naturals is, and this is what has also been fading away since the last 10 years, it's not just because of expensive that we don't use them. It's because the people or the youngsters, the young person which are coming up, They don't have the experience to use them because they're not used to it. When we were trained almost 30 years ago, naturals for us was one of the most important ingredients to put in the fragrance to give it the body, the long-lastingness, the sillage, etc. Nowadays, every time I had a youngster and you had to train them for a year or so, and you say, well, I think I put a trace of galbanum in there, and the guy puts 10 grams pure in there. I said, but what are you doing? You know? Well, I've never worked with galbanum. So you see that they have this lack of knowledge and working with these precious and beautiful products like natural. And then furthermore, legislation, everything's getting shot at, you know, even rose is limited now and this is limited. And animal products are more or less dead and blah, 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 blah. So it's a never-ending story.
Allergy,
skin rashes. Yeah. So some, they just invent something like Oakmoss, where the big thing, I don't know, 6 years ago, it was some kind of a product in there, and then they all got retreated, they took this product out, and then a year later they noticed, well, actually it wasn't that. So so we had to go back again, and then we had to take something else out. So it's a never-ending story. So, but that's something else, that's legislation, but that has something to do with that the whole perfumery industry has no lobby. The perfume industry has no balls, to put it plain.
That's more like it, yes.
To put it plain. Because these guys in Brussels, they come up and say, this and this is in danger. We're going to take this out. This is phototox. This we have to take out. If it's now it's Lilial, it's Lural, it's Coumarine. It's a never-ending story. But all the industry, the five main players, name them all, IFF, Firmenich, Givaudan, Symrise, etc., nobody will stand up and say, F-U-C-K, L'Oreal, if you don't want to use it, we're not going to work with you anymore. But they won't, because it's money-making business. It's all about money. And it's really sad. So to come back to what I was saying, I think some of the most interesting products which have come out over the last years are synthetic. And you absolutely can't say that synthetic has a less value than natural products. It's different. Depends what you're doing, what you're looking for. But there are products which are absolutely magic, like Cashmiran, like Ambroxide, come back to Isoe, yes, Hedion. I mean, they're products you can just bathe in them because they smell so beautiful. They have such a diffusion. And it's not that synthetic musk notes, they can be as expensive or even more expensive than natural products. So, you know, point the finger and say, well, if you have 80, 90% of synthetic products in a fragrance, it must be shit. No, it's not true. It depends how you use them and what to use. And there as well, there's a big difference in money. And there, if you see, for example, that if you work for a Dior fragrance today and they give you 20 euro raw material cost for a perfumer, to be honest, it doesn't mean anything. Cost price, yeah. So if you think about it, absolutely. So it doesn't mean anything. So prices are going down, doesn't matter which brand you have anymore. So you have to find quality and liberty somewhere else, but perhaps not in the big industry. We'll get back to that later. So in general, that's it. Synthetic, natural, and bases. And bases are mainly fantasy. Yes, there is a classical structure of a fragrance, tête cœur fond, so top note, heart and base. Yeah, but I don't know. I've never really thought about structuring a perfumer where I thought about, the top has to be like that and the heart like that. It's you need the main accord first of a fragrance, that you give it its soul, and then you work around it. You add and you finish it off like that. But not necessarily top, heart, base. I think it's a bit cliché. But yes, they are esters and they are aromatic and citric products which go in the top note. Volatile, gone after 5 minutes. Then you go into the heart with a floral part. Of course, bases, musk, woody notes, etc. Amber last forever. Animalic notes, if you're allowed to use them. Well, I am. So, yeah, that is more or less the structure of a perfume, but I always say, anyway, break the waves and swim against the tide. Excellent question. What is a successful fragrance? I don't know. Ask my former boss. He most likely would say the most most sold fragrance on the market. Yeah, great. What is a successful fragrance? Perfume is so subjective, anyway. I mean, sometimes I ask myself why I even talk about it, because I can say my favorite perfume is Fenetti du Bois. I would say, just giving you an example. And I talk to my neighbor or to anybody else, say, oh no, it stinks, it's animal, it's this, it's that, I can't stand it. So what is success? So the way they judge success nowadays is just on how they sell a fragrance. And how they sell a fragrance doesn't necessarily mean something to do with what the fragrance is like. There are so many things involved: the packaging, the bottle, the publicity, the budget behind it, the name, the image, etc., etc. I mean, sometimes I really, excuse me if I'm vulgar, but sometimes I really think you can piss in a bottle and put the right name on it and you can sell it because people believe it. Yeah. No, it's not the time spitting against the industry, not at all. Like I said, I've been in this place now for 27 years, and it's just since 2 years I've been out of there. But it's just after a while, you just think to yourself, I don't know, the magic's missing, the art's missing, the beauty of all this is missing. There have always been exceptions. But if you look at the industry, if you see some of the trendsetters, which have been there for 100 years or perhaps even a bit longer, or for 50 years or 30 years, if you smell these fragrances, there are a lot of them which are based on natural products, no doubt. Secondly, they have character. Thirdly, they have guts. And fourthly, they have such a diffusion and mainly character that they've survived all these years. If it's a Chalimar, if it's a Chanel 5, but even more modern things take an Eternity. I mean, Eternity is 95% synthetic, but it has guts. It has a signature. It's out there. It was the first, which smelled like that. Go even further back, like it or dislike it, Trésor. Give you more examples. Cool Water. For me, I hate the stuff. It's like it's when somebody's cleaning the toilets. But that's where it comes from, the fragrance. But the success, the impact on the market, and the uniqueness. There is nothing which smelled like Cool Water before, sorry to say, like or dislike. That's where I always say, subjective. Who decides what's good or what's not good? It's just you, yourself. I mean, if not, we would all buy the same fragrance. What becomes different afterwards is that there are more people which are influenced by publicity, branding, and how a fragrance runs. It. His best friend is wearing Cool Water, so I want to wear Cool Water. He's wearing Boss, so I want to wear Boss, yeah. That is also reasons why a fragrance has success. But you can't point the finger and spit on them and say, the fragrance is shit. No, it's not. I don't like it, but it's well done. It's a good creation. It has something. It has guts. It stands out there. And there are a lot like that, even new ones. Not a lot, but there are some out there. And they're getting less and less in the last 10 years. Because if you look at the outstanding fragrances which came out and which still are on the market today, which have success, they're at least like 10 years old. But in the last 10 years, it's getting really, really thin, the ice, guys, huh? Because we're losing ourselves. It's like we're watering down the whole industry. What I've noticed on the consument, people which buy fragrances, they are people which are followers and people which are leaders. 90% of the whole population who buy fragrance, they buy something because of. Because she wears it, or my friend wears it, or this publicity, or this brand, etc. But there are 10% which go a bit further, which perhaps have a bit more education in fragrance or are a bit more interested in fragrance, and they go a bit more deep into this whole material. And they are perhaps capable of smelling a difference between a fragrance which smells cheap, and you see after 3-4 hours on a blotter, or even on a skin, there's not much left, or they wear something and say, well, this is rich, you know, it has a diffusion, it has long-lastingness, perhaps it's more natural in there, stuff like that. So they're more curious. And these people are starting to look, or have been looking, this is a movement since 10 years, I would say. And these are the guys which are going more into these niche brands, which are looking for something different, something by the structure different, by the odor different, by the materials different, the quality, very important, and that is a movement which we've had since, like, in the last 10 years. And this has become really interesting, and one of the reasons why, which made me make this step to get out of there and do stuff. I think I made my name, I don't know, it's over 10 years ago now, when I started to make these perfumes for Comme des Garçons, which were always classified as niche, because they didn't go into this big branding, and they don't go into the chains like Douglas and Sephora, etc. So they always had this kind of a niche thing to it, and then started to make things for Le Labo, Linari. So niche always been my interest. And so after this big movement, yeah, I think they're right and they have something. And that is a big difference between, you know, this movement on the market at the moment. Yeah, well, Fragrance House and Independence, well, I've already said it partly. The problem with the Fragrance Houses is that I would say 90-95% of them all hide behind market tests. There are big groups which mainly started with this, like Procter, L'Oreal followed, Coty, you name them, they're all there. So that means you're making a fragrance which they test worldwide, and if they test something, they test against a market leader. So let's say Acqua di Gio is a market leader. You know that at the end of the day, your fragrance will be testing against Acqua di Gio. You're not going to pop up with something extraordinary, totally creative, because you have no chance to get slaughtered in the test. So with having this upfront information and stuff like that, so people know exactly what to do. So it's, as we say, a la Procter. They have their gremium, they have their team, which make the screening, which ones they're going to test anyway. You put Apple in a fragrance at Procter, they love it. Because one of their biggest successes was the bottle, I think it's called, this blue thing which smells apple. You put apple in there, you're already in the test. Feminine, you put something in there which reminds you of Laura, because it used to be their bestseller for over 10 years, you're already in the test. So with knowing these elements and with knowing which buttons to press, you get out your computer, you have your little buttons, you have your Legos, and you take this accord out of that one, this accord out of that one, this out of that, put this together, like, you know, making a cocktail, and you present this to Procter. They won't say, I know it. They'll say, oh, I like this. It reminds me of something, but I like it. Of course it reminds them of something, because you put the bloody apple in there, or the other one, you put the Muguet in there. So of course it reminds them of something, but they say, but it's well done, it's really original, but it has something I like, you know, of course. So, and you do this now for all these companies. So that's why, at the end of the day, the market is starting to smell the same, because you're doing like a trickle-down. This has worked, so, okay, we're doing one like that. It's a bit different, but it's in the same family. So and then you look at all these families, and it's all smells similar. No originality anymore, nothing stands out, everything's polished, you know. Just change the colour of the bottle. Nowadays, they don't even change the bottle anymore, just change the colour. Or we do light, or then we do blue, and then after blue, we do black, and then we even had black, and then black, light. And so all these trickle-downs, triple extreme, so, yeah, it's all just money-making. They keep the same bottle, change the colour, and that's it, and they just put any fragrance in there, as long as you can just show them, oh, look, we tested it here in France and in state. Great. Just behind Acqua di Gio, buy it. So that's a hard one. So that's what, when you're working in the big industry, because as I said, at the end of the day, your boss, your management is absolutely not interested. If you can walk out there and you said, I made this, and this, and they stand out on the market and they're creative or something like that, they just don't give a shit. All they're interested about is money-making business, and that's it. So why do we have this movement towards niche, just to wrap it up? I think people are fed up. The market is over-flooded with fragrances. There's too much out there, like I just said, between the light, and the light blue and green, red, blue. We've had enough. And people are seeking for something different, for something with more character, with more personality, etc. Name it as you want. Celebrities are the first out there. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, you can read about any celebrity, you see what fragrance they wear. Well, they're not wearing Flower by Kenzo, and they're not wearing L'Instant by Guerlain, no. These fragrances, they come out, they're made for a certain public. They buy it, they sell 500,000 bottles in the first year. They're really happy because they made their turnover. But, I mean, why should I go out there and smell like everybody else? I mean, that's not the point of a fragrance. I mean, it has to be something personal. I mean, you have to seek for a fragrance. You have to hunt it. You have to you want it. I mean, it has to fit. As you fit your skin, if you like a fragrance and it fits perfectly on your skin, it doesn't mean that it will be the same on your skin. So it's a job to find something out there. People don't even take the time to smell fragrances anymore. They're going to Sephora, and when I see this bullshit top 20, I mean, it's like you're going to a record shop. What is top 20, you know? You know, and you come in and perfume everywhere. They say, oh, no. Oh, yeah. Well, how can you judge a fragrance in 3 seconds? I think we have this movement, but then furthermore, now niche has been on the market now for 10 years, and niche is not niche what it was 10 years ago as well. Come back like to smell of a garage, like Kumbhing Aswar made this series with garage and asphalt and stuff like that. What, to be different, did I smell like a garage of oil or like somebody just tar the street or smell of shrimps or something like that? Okay, yeah, there was all stuff like that. Okay, if you want, it's niche, but I mean, there's a limit to everything. I mean, let's not go too far, guys. Huh? And we mustn't forget, I think niche somehow is alternative. And if you don't have the quality and you don't have the story behind it, it's a story you need, it's a concept. You can't just bring out a fragrance. I mean, there are lots of niche products like Byredo. I mean, okay, the guy's a good looking guy, he has 25 tattoos, he has a bloody body like an angel, and now he's making publicity for H&M. Nothing against that, but he has 20 fragrances as well. So niche is coming a bit like where we came from. So there we have to be really careful as well, because anyway, that's where we are at the moment. Thank you very much for your attention.
Der Hörsaal sendete einen Ausschnitt aus dem Einstein Forum Potsdam vom 3. Mai 2012. Dort sprachen an diesem Tag Experten zu dem Thema Follow Your Nose and Smell. Diesmal an der Reihe war ein Fachmann aus dem Bereich der Parfümherstellung, Marc Baxton.
D-Radio Wissen. Hörsaal.